Hi, you're listening to Funny You Should Ask, the podcast of Belmont Wesley Fellowship, and I'm David Hollis. I'm the campus minister at Belmont Wesley, and I'm sorry for not putting together a podcast last week. I actually was really sick, and I'm really just now becoming unsick, starting to feel better. I actually had a lot of symptoms consistent with COVID-19, and my primary care physician suggested that I go get a COVID-19 test. And so I went through that experience, which could be probably its own podcast in and of itself. But thankfully, my results were negative. Turned out to be a nasty case of strep throat, which I actually didn't know adults could get. And I'll leave you to your own jokes there. But I'm on the meds, I'm feeling better, and the podcast rolls on. But if I sound a little bit something, I'm probably a little bit something because of all that. Also, this podcast episode is probably going to be heavier than a lot of them. It's a thing that I promised I would talk about relative to Frozen 2. We're still doing our series on Frozen 2 and its connections with theology and theological philosophy and those kinds of things. And I mentioned this, I think, in the last episode, maybe. This is, you know, one of those times where I get really confused about when I talked about what, and I don't keep good notes, and so these things happen. But I'm going to be talking basically a lot in this episode about racism, and so that has perhaps triggering effects for people in different ways, or this may be just an episode you want to take more slowly as you ingest it, as opposed to some of our ridiculous and light episodes that we have. I will still try to treat it with the same joy that we treat lots of things, but again, it's not the case where I'm going to come up with a lot of funny things to say about racism, because, well, I would be a pretty terrible person if that was the case. So diving right in, we have, as I mentioned before, kind of two peoples who are set against each other in Frozen 2. At the very beginning of the film, actually, in the story that the king tells his two daughters, we see the emergence of these two people, and we hear about and learn about these new people, the Northuldra people. And the Northuldra people, immediately when I'm watching the movie, even for the first time, I'm seeing it and I'm thinking, okay, well, they are sort of making them in many ways to be my closest synonym and connection is Native Americans, which, again, I want to be as sensitive as I can. Some people say Native peoples. Actually, in the time that I have spent with people who would be called Native Americans, they don't like being called Native Americans, because that's actually kind of a white term that was invented for them. And so many of them actually do prefer to be called Indians, as incorrect in some ways as that is. They ultimately prefer, of course, to be called by their original tribe. So, you know, Creek, Cherokee, Choctaw, whatever tribe they are from, that's what they want to be called. And because those have been so completely decimated, and we've taken very different people and put them all into one group and called them Native Americans, I won't repeat that a ton in this. But I did want to just have that disclaimer to say I'm using that with the understanding that even that term is problematic. So, but they have, the Northuldra people have this deep connection with nature, which Native people certainly had and are still known to have a connection and a spirituality that is deeply rooted in and connected with nature and creation, which I'll come to that in a little bit to say more about that. And just also a little bit the way that they look and are styled and are kind of made to look in the film is a little bit more typical of how Native people are depicted, at least by white people, to look in our day and time. And the, of course, kind of the outcome of what happens also sort of says that, yes, this is the people who are going to be mistreated by the people who are coming into power. And we have the Arendellians, the people of Arendelle, who kind of just immediately come straight into being European and white. And particularly the king, King Runard, who we're hearing the story about him and everything. He's just, you know, kind of automatically you can see him as a European ruler. And so there, one of the, I think, interesting things that the movie does is it opens up the way that myths or narratives, and I say myths not to say, you know, when some people, a lot of times when they say myth, it just means like something that's not true. I don't say that when I say myth, because myth is a story, and a myth may not be 100% factually true, but it may contain a great deal of truth. And so, you know, when we hear like creation myths or those, you know, when we hear things like that, it's not to say that that thing is not true. It's to say that that's a story that we've been told about how this came to be. And so it shows us the power of narrative and of myth in basically saying, the beginning of the movie is the king telling his daughters that we met these people and they were so fascinating and bizarre and so unlike us and magical. And my father was magnanimous and great to them and built them this dam to help them, and it was all for the good. And then all of a sudden they attacked us out of nowhere with no provocation. And, you know, many of us hearing it would think, well, that doesn't really sound right. But, you know, also when you're a child and you hear certain things, then you may not know to ask certain questions, even though kind of immediately one of the daughters says, who attacks someone who brings them a gift? And so she's kind of already on to, this doesn't really sound right. But it shows that power of how were we told and taught the interactions between, you know, Native people and Europeans. And even to this day, even though, you know, all of us kind of, whatever happened on the first Thanksgiving, none of that in any way makes up for the horrible genocide that was to come, that was perpetrated by Europeans in North America. And yet we still kind of protect Thanksgiving in so many ways as not questioning it and not just basically calling it, you know, a sham, you know, because we, in many ways, we want that myth and we want that narrative of, you know, those kernels of corn and sitting down together and being peaceful and those kinds of things to be intact, rather than to have the messiness and the fullness of that story and what went on. And so a lot of this gets into how are we teaching truth about racism? And I think, again, this movie does an amazing job of coming around to saying there is a lot of pain, but there is also great power and just flat out necessity in learning the truth about our past and our history and the way things really happened as much as we possibly can. And even though that causes a lot of pain to learn that things were not the way that they were told to Anna and Elsa's dad. The king distrusted these people because, you know, they were magic or they had connections with magic or these kinds of things. And again, like I said in the last podcast, fear was a great motivator for him. And fear was also a tremendous motivator in what happened with so many of the Native Americans. And this notion again of, well, we're Christian, quote unquote, and this is what that means, and this is the only thing that can mean. And so if you're not, you know, talking directly to and about Jesus Christ, then we're going to kill you because, you know, you're the enemy. You're part of the enemy, and so we have to eliminate you. And of course, we can take that all around the world and see world domination within Christendom and the way that that was done. And both the way people were converted at the tip of the sword and the way people met the tip of a sword, because they would not necessarily say a certain creed or a certain prayer or what have you. And yet again, who gets to make that call? And I would argue we don't get to make that call. So all of that, I guess, is part of a whole to say that I think this movie does a great job of getting at the complexity of that story and of that relationship and of that narrative, and of, you know, my feeling that there are explicit and implicit ways that Christians have been and continue to be involved in racism that have not been fully confessed, that are not being fully honored, that are not being fully confessed and aired out for all to see. And until there is some form of recognition and contrition and real confession and real seeking of forgiveness, there is going to be tremendous brokenness and disunity throughout Christianity, because racism is such a pure and evil sin, and it strikes so completely at the heart of God, because it's ultimately saying that something or someone, you know, God made is not made by God or does not fully have the image of God. And so it's striking directly at God as creator. And so I think that people who continue to either ignore racism within Christianity or Christian racism or who downplay it, say it's not that big a deal, whatever, they're just perpetuating the brokenness, and they're putting off, you know, the time where we could be focused on admitting the sins of racism and the sins of all the attendant sins of racism, slavery, murder, all of the things that have gone with it. And they're putting off that time of healing and delaying really what I believe is the will of God, that we would be healed of those sins, that we would move as much as we can beyond those into the ways that we treat and love each other. And one of the ways in which I think that this is about to be a major thing, if it isn't already, you know, I've kind of been out of it this past week, and so I haven't really followed this all this closely. But I feel like there has not been a ton of attention paid, if much attention at all, to the impact of COVID-19 in prisons and in detainment camps, or whatever we're calling those horrible places where people are being kept against their will. The everything I've seen about how contagious this disease is, when it meets those kinds of populations in terms of people who are housed together, have no ability to social distance, really, this is going to be devastating. It already is devastating, but that in particular is going to be devastating, and it's going to show how, you know, so many people really know, maybe in theory, the racism of the industrial the prison and detention complex in America, but that's going to be bold in its horror, unless something major impacts that to change it. But I really fear, and I'm not trying to, you know, be some kind of, I don't know, you know, doomsday forecast or any kind of, I'm just reading the tea leaves. I'm just looking at the facts. And already there have been a few stories about, you know, this many people infected or this percentage people infected. And again, it's the same kind of situation as people who were on, you know, a Navy battleship or something. And we've seen, again, the infection rates on those ships. And so all that to say, that's going to show people again that, you know, the justice system is flat out racist. The way in which laws are written, the kinds of laws that we pay attention to, the kinds of laws that we send people to jail for, and in turn, or the kinds of crimes that we send people to jail for, those kinds of things. It's a racist system, and it has been from the beginning because it was put in place by racists. And because we're all racists, and if we're not able to say that and confess that and then say, you know, I am a racist, how can I learn to be not a racist? How can I learn to be anti-racist, in fact? Then, you know, we're nowhere. And so, you know, as much as we want to pat ourselves on the back and think, oh, we've progressed so far, these kinds of things, yeah, maybe, but also, yeah, no, because there's still so much impacted in society throughout the world by racist decisions, by racist thoughts and actions. And so I really think it takes, it's going to take some kind of massive commitment that is not just, you know, slapping a nice slogan or motto or logo on something, but it's going to take some group with deep commitment to staying busy and active about something that is, again, is deeply unpopular to talk about and hear about, and to even, you know, devote a podcast to. But I'm sorry, it's there, and it's something, again, that Christians, perhaps more than anyone, but certainly as much as anyone, are called to speak out against, to live out against, and to seek to annihilate from existence the notion that there is anyone who, because of their race, is less than anyone else, or also more than anyone else. So a couple of, I guess, tips that I would offer, which I don't really do a lot, but, you know, I think on this it is important. It's hard to you know, do something like this and just say, okay, good luck, have fun, see you next week, we'll talk about Olaf. But I think it is important to inform yourself. I think that thankfully there are a lot of people finally who are saying, it is not up to me, a racial minority, to teach you, a white person, about racism. There are lots and lots and lots of ways you can learn about racism if you don't know about racism. But, you know, we tend to, again, put a lot of times the burden on, you know, minorities to teach us about racism, when we should be the ones saying, what can I learn about my history that has caused these racist ideas, these thoughts, these actions to persist? And so read. There are so many good books just throughout history, but also just in the last few years, there are incredible books. One, I'm finishing one right now, actually, that I was late to the party on, and I had seen it a few times pop up, but it just kind of didn't register. And then finally it did, and I'm thankful it did. It's deeply powerful. It's called Stamped from the Beginning: The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America. It's by Ibram Kendi, and it's a powerful and dense read. If you're an audiobook person, it's one I would highly recommend to you on audiobook, because it's just, in terms of a reading book, it's taking me a long time to get through. It's very important to take a long time with it. It's not to say that it should be a quick read, but just telling you how it is. Documentaries, if you haven't seen 13th, stupid me, if you haven't seen the 13th on Netflix, I think, probably on other platforms as well, the 13th Amendment and how it did end one form of slavery, but it simply moved to create another form of slavery, which is incarceration and mass incarceration and needless incarceration. And so that's an amazing and very difficult but important thing to watch as well. Anything by Bryan Stevenson, I am continually in awe of Bryan Stevenson. And so Just Mercy, the major motion picture, came out, I think, just a few months ago, even though it feels like several years ago now. But Just Mercy is amazing. Bryan Stevenson has one of the most viewed TED Talks of all time, so you can look that up. And he has also there's a documentary about Bryan and his work on HBO that is incredible. So anything you can get and see about Bryan is great. And beyond that, the most important thing, I think, an incredible and unbelievable person, John Perkins, who I believe that his brother was beaten to death by police in Mississippi when they were fairly young. But I know John Perkins devoted his life to addressing racism. And I was blessed to hear him speak a few years ago. And he just continued this phrase that stuck with me. And he said, "We don't know each other." Just over and over and over again. "We don't know each other." And as simple as it is to say, that's deeply true and meaningful. And it goes for really all of us. We don't know each other. We, you know, now we're probably finding out, like, wow, I don't really even know my neighbors that well, if at all. I'm stuck here in my house and I see them do things. And so maybe in this time of social distancing, you are getting to meet your neighbors better. But trying to think about developing actual relationships with people who are different from you, and especially who have a different color skin. And I say that because that is simply the basic reality of how the majority of us interact with people. And we make our judgments, however racist or not racist they are, a lot of times simply based on what we can see, and on what we can see very quickly is the color of someone's skin. And again, that's completely and totally arbitrary, but that person likely has a very different life from you because of the color of their skin. And so it's worth talking about that, and it's worth hearing their stories, and it's worth believing them, and it's worth working with them for change that makes their life better. It's not going to make your life worse. That I think gets back to the ultimate, you know, fear that there's this notion of you know, pie, you know, and we all, you know, can have a certain amount, but more for you means less for me. That's not how this kind of thing works, or at least it shouldn't be, but in reality it's not. Making someone else's life better does not mean it makes your life worse. It should make your life better because you should be able to go through your day knowing, hey, there aren't going to be people dying in prisons who are simply there because of the color of their skin. And no, that's not at all an exaggeration. That's the reality in which we live. So I pray that that this did hit you hard in the way that I thought it might. It certainly did me. And again, Frozen 2, give it up. So thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week unless I have some other kind of horrible illness. God bless.